Well, hello everyone again. So welcome back to Stage A and EMF 2016 on Sunday morning. So I'm very happy to introduce Sam Fidler, who's going to talk to us about how to brew beer with only a coat hanger and a toothpick, or maybe slightly more. The session after this is unfortunately cancelled, so we've got more time for questions and things afterwards. So anyway, so over to you, Sam. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah. So here to talk today about brewing beer. Think you might need a lot of equipment, a lot of expensive equipment, a lot of shiny metal, when really you can do it with a coffee percolator. It really is that simple. So let's go. Sam, that's me. I am Sam. What's my background? My background is a undergraduate degree in computer science and a postgraduate in human-computer interaction. How does that qualify me for beer? It doesn't, but I've worked in bars, I've worked in brewing, I was a brewer, going to be a brewer again soon. Why beer? Why not? If you had a really good weekend, hopefully you've been to the bar, they've got some really good beers on at the moment. So let's learn how it's made, the ingredients. So I'm going to go through the ingredients, what you need to be aware of when you are brewing beer. So the four main ingredients: water, malt, hops, and yeast. And then we're going to go on to how to make beer. And then there's time for questions afterwards, and we can talk about different styles. We can talk about different brewing methods, different countries and their beers, beer culture, and anything you want, really. So I'm happy to field any and all questions about beer. I'll try not to make too much of it up. Right, what is beer? This is a question I got asked a lot when I worked in a bar. A lot of people say, I don't like beer. Well, what does that mean? What is beer? So beer is, Google, an alcoholic drink made from yeast, fermented malt, flavored with hops. So we've got our water, our yeast, our malt, and our hops, the four ingredients. So under the German Purity Order of 1516, the Reinheitsgebot, they said only three ingredients could be used. They said only malt, hops, and water. So in 1516, we didn't know about yeast yet. But when we discovered it, when I think it was Louis Pasteur discovered yeast, the Germans said, okay, we'll let that be included in the Reinheitsgebot. A lot of German brewers still pride themselves on putting Reinheitsgebot brewed on their beers. We don't have to use hops. We don't have to use yeast anymore to make beer. We can use a lot of different things to make some really interesting beer. So let's go into it. Water. Often the most overlooked thing. It's really important to get your water right when you're brewing beer. There's a lot of salts in water. Different regions of the UK have different water profiles. So if you're in Burton, you've got a water profile that's a lot better at making hoppy yeast. So the birth of IPA, that comes from Burton. If you're in London, you've got a lot more alkaline water. You need an acidic water to make beer, a lower pH, I think. So what you do is you use roasted malts, and stouts and porters are actually started in London. So let's go into it. Carbonates. This is going to get a bit geeky. If you guys want to zone out for a few minutes, feel free. So carbonates, they dictate the acidity of the mash. Lower carbonates equals a higher acidity. So what you find in Burton is a very low carbonate water profile. So it's perfect for making hoppy beers. Then we've got our sodium and chlorine, our salts and our bleachy tastes. Some beer styles do call for sodium and high levels of sodium, such as a Goes from Northern Germany. That's a salty sour beer. If you guys ever get the chance to try a beer by Magic Rock, I'm not advertising here, but a beer by Magic Rock called Salty Kiss, that's a really good example of a modern Goes. So sodium, chlorine, adding to mouthfeel, we want our beer to feel full in our mouth. We don't want it thin or insipid or chalky. But too much of it, we can make it salty and bleachy, which we obviously don't want in a beer. Sulfates, higher levels enhance hop bitterness. So again, what we get in Burton is a high sulfate water profile. We really want those hops to come through, these heavily hopped beers. I'm going to talk about hops in a minute if you're not too sure about what those are. Calcium, again, here we go, a bit more geeky. It's important for yeast nutrient. We want our yeast to thrive whilst we're fermenting our beer. And it also helps take the proteins out of the boil and make for a clearer beer. Again, too much of it, we can impact on yeast. We can overfeed the yeast. We can over-neutralize the yeast. give too many nutrients to the yeast and kill it, which we don't want. Magnesium, another yeast nutrient, which we want in small amounts. All these salts, all these elements are in your water profile. So at home, when you drink your water from your tap, there are these different levels of salts. I'm in Bristol at the moment, and it's got a completely different water profile to when I was in Birmingham. So when I'm brewing now, I've really got to pay attention to what I'm brewing. Birmingham luckily had Burton water, so I was making a lot of pale ales, and they're tasting really good. Moved to Bristol, no good. It's a lot better suited to darker beers that I found. Next ingredient, malt. What is malt? It's more often than not, it's barley. We can use other different types of grain. We can use wheat, oats, rye, spelt, maize, anything we want. More often than not, it's barley. It's abundant, it's cheap, and it makes a really tasty beer. How do we get the malt from the grain? What we need to do is go through a malting process. So first of all, we need to germinate our malt. We need to soak it in big vats of water for about 2 days, and we want little sprouts to start growing. So this is kickstarting an enzymatic process within the malt where we want to convert the starch. We want to make the starches more freely available. So we get little sprouts coming out, and when that happens, we want to stop it. We want to dry the malt out and stop it using its own sugar. As brewers, we're very greedy. We want to use all the sugar we can. We don't want the malt, we don't want the barley to turn into a stalk of barley. That would be bad. We wouldn't be able to make beer with that. So how do we dry it? There's usually, traditionally, big long warehouses with underfloor heating, and you had men for about 12 hours a day walking up and down with rakes, turning the malt, 12 hours a day. They were usually paid 8 to 12 pints a day, so it's not a bad job if you like drinking. We can also use smoke. So in Bamberg in Germany, they're famed for their smoked beers. They use 100% smoked malt in their beers. The beer, again, not advertising, but there's a beer called Echschlenkerler. It's almost like eating a slab of smoked bacon. It's really chewy, it's really tasty. I can't finish a bottle myself. I usually have to share it, but absolutely incredible flavor profiles you can get from the phenols from drying over smoke. Again, different woods will give different profiles to the malt that you're drying. And then what do we need to do? So we've dried it out, and then we can kiln it. So we can change the color of the malt to suit our beers. So a red ale, you'd use some crystal malt. We call it crystal. I'm not too sure why, but that gives a nice sort of caramel color to it. We can roast the hell out of it, and we can burn it, and we can make roasted barley. That's really good at making the mash more acidic. So we can make stouts and porters, but we don't want to use 100% roasted malt. There's no sugar in there. What we've done is we've made it black, and that's the sugar that's carbonized, and we won't be able to use that. We all good so far? Cool. So hops, what do hops give us? Hops give us bitterness. There's something in hops called alpha acids. So if you ever get a hop, they're like these little green pine cones at the top. If you ever get one, you can tear it open, and there's like this yellow pollen in it. It's really sticky. That's called lupulin, and that's where the alpha acids and beta acids come from. But we want the alpha acids to make the beer bitter. Different hops are going to give us different flavors. And sorry, I should have said the malt also gives sweetness to the beer. That's where we get the sugar to ferment. They're antibacterial. So IPAs, India Pale Ale, it's in the name, India. We had to send these beers to the troops in India in the 1700s, 1800s. It's a 6 to 8 month journey by boat. How do we get the beer there in one piece? How do we make sure it doesn't spoil? How do we make sure it doesn't oxidize? Add a ton of hops. Really highly hopped beer, really high strength. So the alcohol and the antibacterial qualities from the hops are going to make sure it doesn't spoil, and they're not hurting people over there by drinking bad beer. It was intended to be watered down, so we had these sort of 8 or 9% beers going over, but the officers in the army liked it so much that they just drank it as it was, really high strength beer. Don't give any to the troops, don't water it down. Okay, this is where people get really angry. There's different types of hops, there's different varieties. They all stem from four noble hops, Saaz, Hallertau, Mittelfru, and one that I always forget, and you can Google later. So these noble hops come from the sort of, get this right, the Czech Republic region, and that sort of area of Europe. Hops were then taken and grown elsewhere, and they also occur wildly. So European hops tend to be very spicy, very earthy. So if you ever drink a sort of a proper Pilsner, like Pilsner Urquell, Budvar. Again, I'm not advertising, these are just examples. You get that really nice earthy spiciness. If you ever try a pint of a Spitfire or Bombardier, that's quite a spicy beer. That's using a hop called East Kent Goldings, which is really spicy, I find. Then we go over to the Americas, and we usually find their hops are a lot more piney. They're not so earthy and spicy. They're piney, they're citrusy. They're quite good. So a lot of American-style IPAs, America have stolen the IPA style off the British and made it their own and then sold it back to us, and we're absolutely loving it at the moment. So Punk IPA by BrewDog, Lagunitas, Sierra Nevada, that sort of thing, their pale ale, they're all using American-style hops, and you really get that sort of punchy, fruity flavor. Then we go to the New World. New World is what we call Australia, New Zealand, and Asia. So Japan are coming out with some really cool hops at the moment. Japan, a country you don't really associate with beer, but they're growing some absolutely amazing hops that have these umami mushroom flavors and textures to them. It's absolutely incredible. There's one from Australia called Victoria's Secret, because it's from the Victoria. Yeah, it's brilliant. Victoria's Secret, and that starts off as an orangey marmalade, and then it goes into mushroom. And this is one hop. You drink this beer and you're like, okay, we're using four or five different hops here, when actually we're just using one. It's given this absolutely amazing flavor profile. So hops can really dictate the flavor of beer. We can use very little hops, or we can use a lot. We can get a lot of bitterness. We can get not so much bitterness. It all depends on style and what we're wanting in a beer. So finally, yeast and bugs. There's two main types. This is when people say, I don't like beer. Well, what do you mean? Let's imagine beer as a big square, and in the middle you've got a Venn diagram that crosses over. On one side we've got ale yeast, on the other side we've got lager yeast, and in the middle there's this weird hybrid crossover that nobody really talks about. Ale yeast, it's a top fermenting ale. It ferments at a warmer temperature, about 16 to 18 degrees C. Ale yeast, yeah. Lager yeast, it's bottom fermenting. It ferments at a cooler temperature. It's actually called Saccharomyces dormitus or pastoranus, which means to rest, to sleep. It comes from the Latin. Ale yeast, conversely, is Saccharomyces cerevisiae. The strains of the Saccharomyces strain of yeast, which also includes brewer's yeast. So if you're at home and you don't happen to have any Saccharomyces cerevisiae or Saccharomyces dormitus, I know everyone doesn't have a little tub in a cupboard. We can substitute baker's yeast. It will do it. It will make alcohol, but a lot slower, because it's designed to give a lot of carbon dioxide rather than the alcohol. So why did I say bugs? I said bugs because there's more that we can use to make alcohol. There's Brettanomyces, there's Lactobacillus and Pediococcus. Brettanomyces means British bug, but it's used a lot in Belgian beers. Up until about 2013, we thought it was a bacteria. There was some work done in the USA that came out and said, well, actually it's a yeast, which people went crazy over, but really, it doesn't make the beer taste any different. It's still the same thing. Brettanomyces, you find a lot in Belgian style, so it gives a really sort of farmyard flavor. Wet dog hair, I've heard, is a flavor given by Brettanomyces. It's tasty, but I wouldn't put it on a bottle. Lactobacillus is a lactose fermenting bacteria. It's what we use to make yogurt. So lactose, milk sugars, and Pediococcus is a weird little thing that you never use by itself. You always bung it in with lacto or Brett or something like that. Or that gives really cheesy, really funky flavors. That's quite an interesting one. So this is a little background as to the ingredients and all the different things that you can choose to make your beer. It's not just, you know, pale malt. It's not just English ale yeast. It's not just boring English hops. It's not just tap water. You know, you really can experiment with these things and make some interesting beer. So let's make some beer. This is a cartoon industrial process. So on the left-hand side, we've got our hot liquor tank. As brewers, we don't like to call water water. We like to call it liquor for some unbeknownst reason. We then add malt to some hot liquor, some hot water, and we put it into the mash tun. So we make the mash. You're basically making porridge for about 2 hours. In a coffee percolator, you can speed that up to about 45 minutes. It's all right. And then we put it into a copper. Copper just means boiling vessel. Again, we like our weird words to confuse people. And then we put it into our hop bank, where we add hops. Just call it a kettle. Then we cool it down, we add yeast, ferment it, we can condition it, and then we can cask it and drink it. But through the magic of PowerPoint, we can use a coffee percolator to make some beer. So let's do that. So mashing, what is mashing? Mashing is converting the starches in the malt and turning it into sugar. So there's enzymes contained within the malt which are activated at about 62, 63 to 69 degrees C. I fermented a little bit hot the other day, mashed a little bit too hot the other day. So 69.2, but it did come down eventually. So how do we do it in our coffee percolator? Put the mash in the carafe at the bottom, as we can see on the left. Top up with water at the back and just let it run through. You don't need the filter basket or anything in there, and we just want it to sort of heat up that malt and make a porridge. It's got a hot plate underneath. This black ring at the bottom is a hot plate, which is a keep warm function on the coffee percolator I picked up. Argos, £10, brilliant. Everyone can make beer for less than 20, let's say. You need your ingredients. Unless you happen to have malt and yeast lying around the house and hops. But yeah, it has a keep warm function for 40 minutes. Absolutely brilliant. We're only doing a 45-minute mash. You're not going to get a massively strong beer through this process. I got about 3.5%, but it's a nice session beer. Make about 2 pints, about a litre by the end. So we just leave that, let it run through, and then we leave it. Leave it alone for 45 minutes, maybe give it a stir every so often to move those enzymes around, but it's really quite a hands-off process at this point. So mashing, brilliant. Then we need to lauter and sparge. Again, the Germans just love their funny words. So lautering means to separate the wort from the grain. So wort is this sugary liquid that we end up with after 45 minutes. If you've ever tasted Horlicks, it's akin to Horlicks. Your kitchen will smell of Horlicks, and later when you're doing the boil, it'll smell of cannabis, but we don't talk about that. That's the hops. Hops are the same family as. Don't smoke hops, though. There's nothing active in there. So what we do is we need to rinse the sugars off. So on the left, we can see that's the wort I've collected. In the middle, that's the grain. Be really careful if you're making it in a coffee percolator. Don't tip it all over the kitchen. The missus will go crazy. Be really careful. So then what we do on the left, we take the jug on the left and we fill it up. So on the right picture at the back, you can see I've filled up the carafe with the sugary liquid. You will never be able to make coffee again with this coffee percolator. This will be a beer percolator from now on. Sugar will burn quite badly and it smells, but that's okay. We get some beer at the end and we can clean it through with water and a bit of lemon juice. So what we do is we let that run through the grain. We want to rinse off sugars. As brewers, we're very greedy. We want to get as much sugar out of the malt as possible. So we run that through, and then what we do is we fill up with some more, just water from the tap, or your personalized water, or your calculated water profile, and fill it up. What we want to do is gather about a litre and a half, because when we come to boil, some of that will evaporate. Cool. So boiling, no expenses spared. Here's a GIF I made for you all. This is how you add hops to beer. Take heed, don't add this many hops to this small volume of beer. The beer I brought for people to try is massively bitter. If you've got a bit of lemonade, it'll be all right. If not, just prepare to have your mouth turned inside out. So we boil. I did a 20-minute boil on this beer. You can do a 60-minute boil, but you'll probably just have syrup left by the end. It's not a long process making it with a coffee percolator. It's not the 6 to 8 hours that it is when you scale up with the kit. You can get it down to 2 hours, including cleanup, which is brilliant. So I woke up at 8 thinking it would be a long day, but I'd made beer by 10 o'clock. And then I had a few beers in the afternoon. It was perfect. I wasn't waiting around all day for things to happen. So here we can see I've got a Columbus hop and a Simcoe hop. So they're both US stars, Columbus, a lot of orange, a lot of pine, and then Simcoe. Simcoe, if you ever try, there's a BrewDog beer called Simcoe, which surprisingly uses Simcoe. That's a really nice hop. It's one of my favorite hops. It's used a lot in American beers. And when you think of an American IPA, usually it's Simcoe or Cascade. That's the flavor profile that comes through. Just boil it in a pan. I did say in the brief that you needed some other means to make fire. You could use a camp stove. You could use hot rocks and drop them into the wort and try and make make the beer that way, Viking style, if you so wish. We just boil it for 20 minutes, add some hops, make it bitter, add some hops at the end to get some flavor profile. And then one of the final stages, penultimate stages, is cooling, aerating, and fermenting. So get a sink, cool it down, or just let it cool naturally, put a lid on it, so we don't get any nasties that we don't want in there, any sort of debris flying around or any bugs or yeast in the air. Word of caution, do not put the lid on when you're boiling the beer. There's a chemical compound called dimethyl sulfate, which evaporates out of beer when you boil it. You want that to evaporate away, otherwise the flavor profile is what Americans call creamed corn. I don't really want to experience that flavor, so yeah, leave the lids off when you're boiling. So then we put it in a big bottle. You can use a soda bottle, you can use a glass bottle like I did. Shake it up, put the lid on, shake it up. Don't have the yeast just yet. We want to oxygenate the wort. We want to get a lot of air in here. Yeast also needs oxygen to convert sugar into carbon dioxide and alcohol. And then what we do is we add some yeast. We can use brewer's yeast. As a brewer, I had some live yeast lying around in my house. Not in the house, it was in the fridge. That's okay. And then we just let it sit for about 4 or 5 days. I put a little bit of tinfoil on. Do not, with these flip-top bottles, do not leave the lid on whilst you're fermenting. The carbon dioxide pressure will build up and it will explode and it will make a mess and you will wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning thinking you're being burgled. It's dangerous. So the final stage is to drink it. That's the easy part. There's some beer up here if you guys want to come and try it at the end. But otherwise, I'm all done. I think I'm done early, about 5 minutes early. So any questions, please ask. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, so we've got time for questions. I've got one myself. So you talk about the water profile being really important, and I guess with the tap water, that's down to where you live, and you can't do much about that apart from move. But if you're making beer yourself in a percolator, if you live in an area with poor water or you want to try something different, if you use a bottled water, does that make a difference, and does it make a difference between the different ones, and what would you recommend?
Yeah, definitely. So in Bristol, for some water profiles that are outside of Bristol, I don't necessarily have the salts on hand. If you go to any supermarket, you'll find sort of big 4-litre gallon jugs of water, and they're quite cheap. A really good one is, I think it's called Ashback or something like that. That's got a sort of a Scottish profile, which is quite soft. That's good for a multitude of beers. But yeah, you can sort of have a look around, have a look on the back of water bottles, and it will give you the breakdown of salts on there and elements to use.
Question at the back. Keep me fit again. I need it.
Hi, so thanks for that. It was really fascinating. So I've just started brewing. Brought my own bucket and everything. So I just wanted a really top tip, if you've got one, is sterilizing is the bit that takes the most faffy bit out of it all, especially when I've got multiple bottles.
Yeah.
Have you got any tips?
Top tip is to just keep everything as clean as possible. It's quite a messy process. There's a lot of water. There's a lot of sticky liquid, but you hit the nail on the head. Sterilization is key. So when I worked in a brewery as an apprentice, 90% of my time was cleaning pressure washers, mops, various different high alkaline or high acidic fluids, but just keep everything clean. Household bleach you can use. I wouldn't recommend it. If you can get a hold of something called Star San, not advertising, Star San, it's a foam on beer cleaner, so you can leave it in the beer and the beer is still safe to drink afterwards. That's a really good one. You can, from brewing supply shops, you can get this sort of bleach powder, which you mix up into solution, you can spray on things. That's really good. Just make sure if you're using a bleach solution to wash it off before you use the equipment again. But yeah, thank you for mentioning. Yes, sterilization is key. Cleanliness is next to godliness, beeriness. Yeah.
Do you use any filings, or do you let it be naturally cloudy and therefore vegan?
I believe the Lord gave us livers for a reason, and that is to filter beer. I'm joking. No, you can use filings. In the volume I was doing, the 1 litre volume, I didn't think it necessary. And sometimes you do want a cloudy beer. So I actually used a Belgian yeast strain, which produces a cloudy beer. It's a high fluctuation. It's a low precipitation yeast. And you really want that profile to come through with Belgian strains. This is a bit of a, are there any children in the audience? No, it's a bit of a bastard beer. So it's a mild malt base with American hops and Belgian yeast. So yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. Like I said, too many hops, but come and try it in a minute if you want. There's also a 9% stout, which was made as well, which is nice. I tasted it last night.
Yeah. Have you got a name for the old beer you've brewed? I'm tempted to call it a Pangalactic Gargle Blast beer.
I haven't got a name for it yet, but I'm happy to take names if anybody wants to name it. The stout is called the Mussels from Brussels, again using a Belgian yeast strain.
Is it likely to work, and is it likely to be safe to expose it to pick up natural yeasts instead of adding one to do it old style?
So, brilliant question. In Belgium, what you get is a lot of wild fermented beers. So what they do is they have rooms as big as this with massively long, shallow trays, and the beer's only about sort of 2 inches deep. And this is after the boil. We want to cool it down. So large surface area, we'll cool it down quickly. But then we have a wall, which is just slats, and we allow this natural yeast and these natural bacteria to come through. And yeah, you can produce some really good beers. I live city centre Bristol. I wouldn't open my window and ferment it with anything floating around there. I've done a really good one in Birmingham at a friend's house, who had a really nice big garden. We put it under an apple tree, so you get a lot of natural yeast and bacteria on the skins of the apples, which were falling down into the beer, and that made some really incredible results. But definitely go old school and just leave it to chance. And it takes a lot longer to ferment, so bacteria won't convert the sugar to alcohol and carbon dioxide as quickly, but you get some really, really interesting flavors just from the yeast, yeah.
Will it be safe, or are you at risk of getting things that will produce methanol, wood alcohol?
Would it be safe? You've sterilized the beer through boiling it. You'd hopefully add a few hops to it whilst you're boiling it, which would give it antibacterial qualities. Some bugs, if you get a bitterness over a certain threshold, so about 10 IBUs, international bittering units is what we measure bitterness in, over about 10 IBUs, so just a sprinkling of hops, that will usually be enough to impede the growth of other nasties. The yeast will go to work first and make enough alcohol that hopefully it's safe enough that the bacteria won't take hold. If you notice anything, so if there's a white mold on top, that's usually okay. We can leave that there. If it's any other color than white, I'd chuck the beer away personally. But it's usually safe to drink, even if there's a massive sort of scum of white mold on top. I've got some beers at home, sour beers that I've been aging for about 2 years, and they've got about a centimeter of this white mold on top. But if you dip the pipette in underneath the skin, take a sample, it's absolutely brilliant. It just continues to develop. So when you bottle with a bacteria or something that isn't beer yeast, the beer will continue to grow in the bottle. So you can bottle a beer, try it 1 year, try it the next, and they could be two completely different beers.
If anyone wants to try it at home, are there any good websites with simple instructions and timings and things like that, and lists of ingredients and where to get them? What would you recommend for that?
Yeah, so it's really grown in the past about 18, 24 months in the UK. There's a brilliant little supply shop down in Swindon called Rob the Malt Miller. Not Rob him, as in the verb to rob, his name is Rob. But he has a lot of ingredients. You can also build your own recipe. If you look in the yellow pages, there's bound to be a homebrew shop in your town. And you don't have to use malt. You don't have to do this process that I've done. You can go to Holland & Barrett's or a health food shop and just get a jar of malt extract. That is the wort, unhopped wort, condensed down into a syrup. You can get that, dilute it with some water, boil it with some hops, or you don't have to use hops. You can use herbs. You can make something called a gruit, which was really popular in the 1300s, 1400s. Hops were actually shunned. They were seen as sort of the devil's work until they were found. But yeah, you can make any sort of beer. Just yellow pages, just Google it to find some simple instructions. Google how to make beer. It really is simple. It's not as hard as people think it is. It's not black magic. It's scientific, but it's an art as well. It's just making porridge and then fermenting it.
And it's interesting to hear you say that, and saying 1300s, 1400s just then just brought to mind how, yeah, this used to be pretty much a family profession. Used to be the woman of the house would be the brewer for the family, because you'd have beer instead of water. So it's just interesting to hear you bringing it back in that way.
Yeah, most definitely. It traditionally was women's work. Brewsters, there's one of my friends, Nikki Pete, she went out to New Zealand and did a sort of a trek round for a year, and she did a Kickstarter campaign and looking at females in the brewing industry. And yeah, it was traditionally a female job, and it shouldn't be male oriented as it is now. There should be, you know, a lot more women in beer. It's not a, you know, there shouldn't be this, you know, image of a beardy man with a belly and sitting in a pub with beer. You know, it's open to everyone. It's, yeah.
The beers you make yourself, how do they compare, if you've brewed it well in your percolator, to something you'd buy off the shelf?
It depends. It depends what you're going for. Some people try to emulate different beers or emulate a certain beer. So somebody will want to maybe copy Punk IPA by BrewDog. And BrewDog have actually released all their recipes online. If anyone's interested, they've got a free downloadable PDF, 250 beers, and they keep updating it with the beers they brew. They really want to make it open source and get people brewing their beer and getting interested in their beer and brewing in general. So yeah, back to the recipes question, brewdog.com /blog or something like that.
Cool. What's your recommendation in the beer tent as the best?
I haven't seen the list just yet, but I read the whole list before I came, and there's some really good stuff. I mean, it's brilliant that you guys have got independent brewers such as Hogstar, Hogsback, Four Pure, a brilliant brewery based down in Bermondsey, London. So definitely check it out. Try and support the craft beers, the independent brewers, because it's good beer. Cool. It is tasty. It's. Yeah, but if you like your Carlsberg, if you like your Fosters, then you know, power to you. If you enjoy it, that's cool.
Brilliant. Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions? I can't see any. So, we've got beer tasting here.
Yeah, any empty glasses, bring them up and I'll fill them.
So it just remains to me to say thank you very much indeed, Sam Pidlove, telling us back
here. Thank you very much.